And I came to realize that this feeling really was connected to the dream that I had. And I didn't know fully then, but it was a start into opening that wound of understanding that this was not a dream. What had happened was real.
After realizing that she had been a victim of sexual assault, she confided it to her best friend, who encouraged her to deal with it. It was the first time Nati said what had happened to her out loud.
I cried a lot. It was the first time I had cried in front of anybody, and it was with her because I trusted her. She was the first person I really, really trusted, so she held that space for me to share my childhood.
Finally, being able to talk to someone about the experience proved helpful. But Nati still hadn't dealt with many of the underlying issues. She spent the next 10 years taking refuge in alcohol, drugs, and destructive relationships. By then, her parents had found a way to sober up by reconnecting with their indigenous roots. But Nati was convinced this strategy wouldn't work for her. Looking for a fresh start, she and her best friend moved to Montreal. But the new setting didn't change Nati's old habits. She continued to abuse drugs and alcohol. Her behavior eventually led to a fight with her friend. The fallout made Nati realize she had to fully confront what had happened to her as a child. So she went back home to tell her parents about it.
That conversation was very hard. It was one of the most challenging conversations I have had with my family. I remember all of us sitting kind of like a circle. And I remember nobody had any idea why they were there, or why this was being initiated by me. I told them that I hadn't told them because I didn't trust them. I didn't feel they would understand, or it was more of trust. I just didn't trust them, and I told them that. I had still hated them and had resentment towards them, so it was hard for me to share anything with them. So this was one of the first moments where I really shared something vulnerable to my parents.
Listening to Nati, Fabiana realized that keeping her children in the dark had created trust issues, so she decided to open up to them. After walking in the jungle for 8 days, Fabiana and her family finally made it to Mexico, but they soon realized they weren't alone. Thousands of people had fled to the neighboring country, where a makeshift refugee camp had been established near the border.
The United Nations had already arrived to help, but since we were thousands of people, we only got one or two tortillas a day. And that's not enough for a person. It's not enough to sustain a body. We didn't have any clothes. We didn't have cooking utensils. We had nothing. We went out looking for scraps, for anything we could use to boil some water. And that's when people started getting sick. One of my children died because he was struck by sickness.
The family was then sent to another refugee camp in the Mexican state of Campeche. They lived there for the next 8 years. It was here where Nati was born. The conditions were similar to the ones they had faced in the border.
The place they sent us to was dry. The water, well, they would only give us a liter per person per day. And that's not enough. The food was the same. It was rationed. So I would give my children all of it, even if I didn't eat anything.
Slowly, Fabiana lost hope. She started thinking that the family would have to stay in Campeche forever. But one day, out of the blue, they received a letter from Fabiana's brother-in-law. He had emigrated to Canada before the family fled to Mexico. He initially thought they had died during the conflict, but after discovering his family members were alive, he helped them resettle in Vancouver. It was then that Fabiana and her husband decided they would never discuss the details of their exile with their children.
I think that if my parents had been a bit more open to their own experience, it would have been a more safer space for me to be able to share my experience, because I would have known that, wow, you've gone through so much. You can relate to my pain.
Nati's confession motivated her parents to finally share their experiences during the war. Understanding all the violence and trauma they endured for almost a decade has allowed her to put away her negative feelings towards them. She now embraces them for who they are. But Nati's commitment to break the silence goes well beyond her household. Now she's a social worker.
I'm very focused with youth and children because I realize the importance of the innocence, the importance of providing that nurturing space and empowering them as beautiful beings to see their true power and allow themselves to creatively explore it and connect with it.
Nati's family is still healing, but coping with decades of silence takes time and the help of every family member. Nati's parents don't drink anymore. The family has also found a place where they can grow traditional Guatemalan crops. Joining her parents at the farm has helped Nati reconnect with her indigenous roots. All of this makes Nati have high hopes for the future.
I'm still healing, so I see myself being a bit more liberated and free and working with a community, my community back home in Guatemala. And I see my family full of lots of love and joy, and I see them stronger. I see the roots of our household to be more grounded.
This documentary was produced by Carlos Tello and Aurora Tejeda with the support and assistance of CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We would like to thank Nati and Fabiana for sharing their stories with us.
It's time now for Gardening with Embark, and joining me here in the studio, as he does every week, is Pablo Vimas, Gardens Manager for Embark Sustainability Society here at SFU. And if people, I mean, I know people listen all the week, but I mean, you're running the learning gardens here at SFU, two of them, right?
Hi. Yes, correctly. Good morning, everyone. Yes, Embark has two learning gardens here in campus, in Burnaby campus. One is located on the third floor in the Student Union building, and the other is located behind Task 1 on the south side of the building. But that garden is slowly, we are moving towards the green field behind the Maggie Benstone field.
Yeah.
So it's close to the Student Union. So yeah, we are having two beautiful gardens, all producing and all used for learning and as well growing food for anyone in the community, that SFU community, that is interested in growing food.
Excellent. So we're close to the end of the summer. It's a bit of a cooling trend, which, you know, in some ways is nice because it's a little more comfortable, but it also signals that fall is close upon us.
Correct. Yeah. Last week we talked about nature signs that is telling fall is slowly is moving in. And yeah, today we have a nice cold weather, which is good. As a gardener, we have a break of this hot weather, and as well it gives us to slow down and to look at our vegetables in the garden. In the previous weeks we've been busy watering, and we had to make sure that everything is nice and moist, the soil is nice and moist, and keep harvesting. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we tend to lose what's happening in the picture, what's happening in the garden.
Yeah.
So with this weather we water and we start seeing like a, we had beautiful pole beans that suddenly all the leaves are gone, all the tops are gone, as only the beans hanging, and when I look around, oh, deer droppings.
Yeah.
So the deer came to visit our patch of pole beans.
Yeah.
And next the patch of pole beans we have tomatoes.
Yeah.
And as well, all the shoots are gone. Okay, so yeah, so they also enjoy the tomatoes. And so in your own garden, you will see what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So we will slow down and see what's happening. One thing that is common at this moment is if you are growing kale, cabbage, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts,
mm-hmm.
aphids.
Right.
So we see now a cluster of aphids. Aphids all over the planet. And we could see that they are aphids, young eggs, because mm-hmm. that's how they overwinter.
Yeah.
And we also notice that there is kind of a crystal white powder mm-hmm. on the leaves.
Yeah.
So these are the exoskeletons of the aphids, because they also shed.
Yeah.
And as well, we can see kind of little brown cysts. So kind of a dome, very hard dome.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that there is a wasp that lay eggs inside aphids.
Oh.
And when those wasps parasite it, eats the aphid, creates that nice cyst.
Right.
So, yeah. So now we know that as well there is some beneficial insects in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And the aphids are preparing themselves for overwinter, so yep. lots of eggs. And as well, when we see, there is this nice kind of a crystal sugary style on the leaves. So now we have to say, think like, how am I going to manage this?
Right.
So we don't want to provide a habitat for aphids to overwinter.
Right.
And next spring they are yeah. in the garden.
Because that means this year's problem is next year's problem too.
Correct. So putting those infested leaves in the composter won't be the right thing.
Right.
We can chop and put in an open area where snow will come and temperatures will drop and hopefully those aphids will die, those
yeah.
eggs will die, but don't put in the composter.
Right.
So that's one thing. That the other thing that, unfortunately, here we don't have much space, so we collect those leaves and we put in a container that to be taken by the city.
Right.
So you have to decide what I'm going to do with these infested plants. We don't want to, as I say, to provide a nice environment in the yeah. composter, and next time you harvest the composter, you are bringing this soil with loaded right. aphids, and then we see what's happening.
So what else can you do on the plant itself? Because we're removing the leaves that we see are infested.
Yeah, so
we can't take all the leaves off the plant.
Well, yeah, so at the moment all the leaves are completely infested, so yeah. it's just removing the plant completely.
Okay.
So the same happens with in cabbage, which are already ready to harvest. The older leaves of the cabbage are with cysts, are with aphids, and as well with the kale.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to just try to see, I keep it, I remove it. So we had to be very, very, clean, be a good janitor. As we've been explaining at the beginning of the spring, we had to be good janitors. Now is the time to be a good janitor again to prevent the keeping insects, aphids, or any insects for the next season.
All right. What other problems are we seeing that we can help by cleaning up properly?
So the other thing that we have seen is corn.
Mm-hmm.
The corn should be with ears all around the plant. But guess what? We have rodents. So the rodents came and peeled the corn, removed the husks of the corn, and ate all the seeds.
Right.
So again, that's what we're interested in the corn itself, in the ear of corn. So now it's time to remove the plant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are two options that we have in here. One is to pull the plants from root,
mm-hmm.
or the other is just cut above the root system.
Yeah.
So just cut the canes. And the what happened is when we remove the root system, we are destroying this nice habitat for invertebrates and mm-hmm. bacteria and fungi that lives in the soil.
Right.
So we're just ripping it.
Yeah.
But if we just cut a cane above the ground and leave the root system in there, the habitat for those living things in the soil still is there.
Well, that's good.
And so the plant, the root system will die, and the living things will try to find spaces right. where, so we don't rip. So that is what I always advise. Leave the, because the corn has a very, very, very strong root system,
mm-hmm.
and it takes time to remove that. So just leave it there and plant around it.
Yeah.
And so at the moment, we're just thinking crops that overwinter very well, like a snow peas, for instance,
yeah.
that we can locate between the canes of corn.
Right.
So Yeah, because the corn was eaten by rodents. It's not edible for us.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be eating either. But that all...
And
that,
they're just going to keep coming back as long as it's there, right?
Yes. Yeah, so as well, we don't want to invite rodents to our garden. So remove the corn and chop. Chop the corn and put into the composter because the cans of corn are rich in sugars.
Mm.
So they're rich in sugar, so it's very good environment and food for the bacteria and fungi that lives in the composter.
Yeah. Great. Anything else we're worrying about? I guess, you know, you mentioned deer at the beginning, and they're especially difficult to protect against because even a tall fence they can sometimes jump over.
Yes, our garden is wide open, so it's just, at the moment, remove whatever is left, the beans, and again... The root system of beans has this bacteria that fixes nitrogen from mm-hmm. the air.
Right.
So again, don't repeat that. Just trim the pole vines, the bean vines, and leave that root system in the soil. So the nitrogen still is there. The bacteria yep. still is in there.
Yep.
Yeah. So. And do the thing that we slowly will see aphids coming. Slugs coming to the garden, and again it's like, oh, what we do with these? But because it has been so dry,
yeah,
I haven't seen many slugs. Right. So the moment that it starts raining, the rain comes back, then we will see them. So we have to be again prepared how to deal with them.
Right. Always so much to do in the garden.
Yes, it is. And it's exciting because each season it has different activities to do.
Yeah.
So now we are in this transition mode that, yeah, summer is kind of behind us and we are looking to fall
yeah.
and making sure that we have all our nice plants ready for overwintering and as well cleaning and maintaining the garden. Clean before the falls arrive itself with lots of leaves, and then we start in mulching mode,
right.
collecting the leaves and topping it up on top of the soil.
Right.
So, yeah, so at the moment, remove anything that is not edible, that is infested, and otherwise we'll have too much work in the coming weeks.
Right. Excellent. Thanks so much, Pablo.
Welcome. Yeah, it's a pleasure to share some tips on what's happening here in our garden.
Great. Pablo Vimes of Embark Sustainability Society. Tell us how people can find out more about Embark.
Sure. If you are interested in learning a bit more about gardening, or you can join us in our seasonal learning cohort, gardening cohort. Next cohort starts on September the 25th, and we meet for 7 weeks. You can find information about Embark to our social media channels at Embark Sustainability or visit our website embarksustainability.org.
Great. Thanks so much. Talk to you next week.
See you next week.
And here is Peter R.H. with a bit of a discussion on Brazil, the IMF, and a few other topics as well.
So for once, Magnus, you weren't part of the conversation between me and you and me, and Jesse was here on Monday.
Yes, last week.
So what happened was that I kind of followed up with what I said about Venezuela. I was the week before that, 2 weeks ago, I was saying how I was unhappy with how Hugo Chavez was, his moan of operandi. Mm-hmm. And I had seen the 2009 Oliver Stone documentary,
right.
which was about Hugo Chavez, plus a few other countries, including Brazil. Now, Lula...
He's the leader.
Yeah.
Current leader, is he not?
But he's the current leader now, but he was leader 2003-2010.
Right.
And then there was a bit of a break. He became a leader January 1st, 2023. He's been so ever since.
And somewhere in the middle of there was an attempt to prosecute him, was there not?
Oh, maybe you can just say a bit about that.
Well, I'd have to research it a little bit, but carry on.
It's the one previous to him.
Yeah.
Donald Trump's unhappy.
Yes, Bolsonaro, who's also...
Thank you for saying his name. 2019 to 2022. Is this that it's Portuguese, I guess, foreign languages, unfortunately. Kind of baffle me to say properly. Anyway, so that's the one there. Now, one thing I was saying was from the documentary, I was kind of impressed that Lula had paid off the IMF loan. Now, mm-hmm. we're going to come to this. However, Brazil still owes World Bank loans, which I wasn't aware of the previous week. But it was interesting, if you look at the documentary, it's yeah. called South of the Border, mm-hmm. 2009. He said the IMF said, don't bother paying it off. You can roll it back. And he said, no, I'm going to pay it off. Now, however, it still owes a World Bank loan. Now, what happened in 1981, the last act of Robert McNamara was that he did a World Bank loan for Brazil, which was a military dictatorship at the time, about deforestation of the Amazon rainforest to mm-hmm. do cattle raising. This was actually the last thing that he did.
Mm-hmm.
The last, I guess the contract. And he was a World Bank president from 1968 till 1981. Now then, actually, there is a difference between a World Bank loan and an IMF loan, and they are part of the United Nations system. As I said in previous times, there's always people said, "Well, it's not part of the United Nations." Well, it kind of is. Mm-hmm. It kind of is. Now, I'm going to read a bit from the Google.
Yeah.
Brazil does not have a single static amount it owes the World Bank, as this is an ongoing relationship that changes with new loans and projects. However, in March 2025, which is under Lula,
mm-hmm.
Brazil and the World Bank announced a significant new initiative of $1 billion to enhance productivity, sustainability, and social inclusion. While the World Bank reported a total of $17.5 billion invested in Brazil from 2012-2015, lending for the International Bank of Reconstruction mm-hmm. and Development declined to about $500 million annually after 2015. And sorry for doing that a bit, but it's interesting about this military dictatorship that existed from 1964-1985. I asked the Google, I said, was Brazil fascist in 1981? It says no, but it's under a military dictatorship. And then I saw a YouTube posting about the history of this military dictatorship that was 1964-1985. It seemed that it was easing out and it was democratizing itself. However, mm-hmm. it was rather odd I don't see how a military dictatorship is not fascism, Magnus. Do you maybe can say a few?
Well, I was reading an article about this the other day that was sort of making a distinction between fascism as a political ideology and whatnot, and military dictatorships. I mean, they're both typically authoritarian regimes. So in that sense, six of one, half a dozen of the other. But I guess they're not exactly the same thing.
Well, I think what was really going on is that it was easing out of fascism.
Mm-hmm.
I think that during that period from 1964... 1985, it was at the beginning fascist in some way. Mm-hmm. I got it on my tablet here. The main difference is this is the difference between a World Bank loan and an IMF loan.
Yeah.
The main difference is the IMF provides short to medium term loans for immediate bounce of payments, issue and monetary stability, while the World Bank offers long term loans and technical support for specific developments like infrastructure and poverty reduction. So what happened to Jamaica in the 1970s, they got emergency IMF loans that the IMF kind of took advantage of them. One thing was that, and I don't know if this is true now, but there was an agreement. They were not to have a dairy in industry. Mm-hmm. All dairy, so I mean, you got to have powdered milk and so on.
Right.
In fact, it was illegal to for them to have, I mean, if they
that was one of the terms of the loan?
Yes.
Huh. That's weird.
And they had an arrangement with Denmark, and I'm half Danish, so don't blame me about that. But anyway... one of the things that there have you ever heard of this town in Brazil called Brasilia?
Yes, it's a capital city, right?
And
it's a little capital zone, and they built it just they built it just to be the capital city. It wasn't there already. Anyway, go ahead.
But they started construction of this prior to the military dictatorship, but mm-hmm. it was sort of spurred on. The creation of it, like it's sort of a bit odd because it's like everything has symmetry to it, which is a bit odd.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of like it's kind of looking at a few pictures, like it's got this there's this type of architecture called
brutalism.
Brutalism. It looks a bit like that, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's called brutalism, but it's that sort of modernist. 50s, 60s sort of utopian kind of thing
yeah.
with like lots of sort of smooth archways and interesting shapes and was very fashionable around that time and you know some of the stuff that was built for instance the Montreal Olympics is perhaps sort of the end of that period.
Well, the other thing is that I'm a fan, I think I mentioned this in previous shows, of the 1939-1940 New York World's Fair, which right. was called the World of Tomorrow. And looking at this Brasilia, it's not quite that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the architecture is a bit more friendly in the 1939-1940 New York World's
yeah.
Fair. It's sort of this, there's more of an aesthetic to it, and this is like the actual brutalist, which is not quite, because it's sort of in between when you see it. But so I don't know. It seems that Trump maybe wants to go back to a military dictatorship.
Right.
So I don't know. So there'll be more weeks to come.
Okay.
More information.
Well, we started off with Venezuela. What was your conclusion there?
About Venezuela?
Yeah.
They didn't. Hugo Chavez wasn't. The problem was. He wasn't having other people helping him out with the economy.
Right.
And he was just taking it upon himself to do everything, it seemed, or very superficially mm-hmm. have help, which is not what I think Franklin Roosevelt did. And even he did a few mistakes like internment of the Japanese.
Yeah.
And the other thing was that Woodrow Wilson in the 19-teens did something where blacks could not enter the civil service.
That's a whole, yeah.
And it was Harry Truman who ended that. It wasn't Franklin Roosevelt.
Right.
And some people think that Franklin Roosevelt was a bit of a demigod, but not to the extent, I think, someone like Hugh Chavez.
Yep. Well, you know, everyone's a product of their time. And, you know, not to let people off lightly, but, you know, things that are common and accepted within their time are often going to be blind spots for folks, you know?
Mm.
Whether it, you know, and, you know, you could say that's sort of an excuse for FDR. Who knows? Anyway, that's like a whole new topic, so why don't we finish
out
there?
We'll have something for the weeks ahead.
All right. Thanks, Peter.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to 2.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
and anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.